Blog Talk Radio.
All right, ladies, buckle up. It's showtime.
Well, now take down your fishing pole and meet me at the fishing hole. We may not get a bite all day, but don't you rush away. What a great place to rest your bones, and mighty fine for skipping stones. You feel fresh as a lemonade, setting in the shade. Whether it's hot, whether it's cool, oh, what a spot, always been like a fool. What a fine day to take a stroll and wander by the fishing hole. I can't think of a better way to pass the time of day.
You probably can't even figure who the heck I'm talking about.
Down your vision pole and meet me at the vision pole. I can't think of a better way to pass the time of day.
Good old Andy Griffin, dead at age 86. Like it or not, Matlock was a hero of mine. He was a hero of mine. He may not be a hero to most of you. But as I always say to the rest of you, F you, puh. I'm going to miss old Matlock, old Andy Griffith. It's sad when you see someone go like that. It actually lets you know how old you're getting. Because Matlock was an old guy when I was young, when I was in my 20s, maybe even my teens. Good old Andy Griffith was an old guy. So 86 years, I mean, that's considerable. It's another 40-some-odd years down the road for me, but that's a long way to go. Now, I respect that man. Good guy, good-natured, never got political, never wore his policies or his beliefs on his sleeves, just got out there and did good work and kept his goddamn mouth shut. Like a lot of these people today should do. They fail to realize it, though. But you should pay attention to somebody or follow the mantra of a guy like Andy Griffith. You know, he kept his personal politics to himself. He knew who he was. He understood how iconic his characters were. It wasn't important for him to go out there and start talking about his personal views. A lot of people can follow good old Andy Griffin. Griffith, I should say. Because I always called him Griffin growing up. Andy Griffin. A lot of black people, I think, still call him that. Andy Griffin. It's Griffith. Dumbasses. But you never ever probably watched that show anyway. But a man that should be respected, and I respect his work, I respect who he is, and it's a loss. I always, you know, he kept to the quiet, you haven't heard from him in years. So it's a solemn day for people who are true television fans, like myself, and it's sad to see him pass away. we miss you. And I just wanted to play that. A lot of you probably didn't even know that there were words to that song. To the old Andy Griffin theme. All you remember is whistling it. But you didn't know there were actual words. And if you didn't know, that was Andy Griffith singing the song as well. In that presentation we just played. Andy Griffin from the Andy Griffith Show. And, of course, Matlock, as many of my generation will remember growing up. He was the guy's version of Murder, She Wrote. You know, he was a hokier version of Perry Mason, which is definitely my grandmother's era. But I love some Perry Mason. Don't get me wrong. I love Perry Mason. But Matlock was that next generation's Perry Mason, you know, Southern, you know, defense attorney trying to save people from false charges. During an era when it probably, you know, because nowadays they do these courtroom dramas, you know, usually about the, you know, watch Law and Order. Watch CSI. You know, it's all from the good guy, as they say, side of the television show. Matlock was, you know, the defense. You know, trying to get the guy spared, if you will. You know, you got a couple of shows like that. Now, you ever notice that most of those lawyer shows that are about defense attorneys, it always got the defense attorneys being sort of like whack jobs who are womanizing scumbags? You ever know that? Notice that? Yeah. Franklin and Bash. You know, even Boston Legal, for crying out loud. That was a big show for a long time. Matlock had a little bit of humor in him, but, you know, he was a decent kind of guy. You know, the comedy happened around him. He wasn't the foil. I don't know where I'm going with this. I'm just making a point. So not a lot of news today. Of course, it's the day before the 4th of July. Excuse me. And I hate coughing on the mic. It's the day before the 4th of July. And there's plenty of conversation to be had about our 236th birthday, which happens tomorrow. And when it's a slow news day, we have to get into what I call the social topic. And I'm noticing a large group of people today, more so than I've ever seen, these people who are disrespecting the notion of America now more than ever. And I always consider the fact that we have a president of the United States who in 2008 said that he was going to, you know, forego the idea of red states and blue states. These are the United States. And talking about fundamentally changing America. And yet we have more and more people in this country who hate this country than ever before. I've never seen the 4th of July polarize people in the fashion that I see it today. And I'd like to talk today about why that is and why I know that is. So I'll get into that about the 9 o'clock hour, because I think you'll be stunned to realize why exactly I know that there are people out there who hate this country. And I'm not going to give you some stupid answer like, oh, it's because they hate themselves. Because people always say that about me. So, you know, you always criticize black people because you don't love yourself. No. That is a punk-ass way to go about explaining why people behave the way that they do. You know, give some effort, you effing moron. Give some effort. I can clearly tell you why there are more and more people in this country who hate this country more than anything. And it's really simple. But I'll save that till the 8 o'clock, till the 9 o'clock hour, the next hour of the show. That'll be my opening monologue. And when you hear it, if you don't find it within yourself that I'm telling the truth, then you're just a liar. Also today, I'd like to talk about the hypocrisy of Barack Hussein Obama. The extreme hypocrisy of this man. I can't wait until the Real Talk Blasters go silent on November 7th. We're going to play that song on November 7th by Simon and Garfunkel, The Sound of Silence. This is the sound of silence. Do, 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 do. Yeah, we're going to play that. The Sound of Silence. Real Talk Blasters, The Sound of Silence, November 7th, 2012. They will feel my wrath. On November 7th. I got no JC, so I'm just talking to myself and the rest of you. I'm sure you're out there. I know you're out there, so just enjoy the banter that I give to you tonight. Mary is actually on her way. She should be here shortly. Again, there's some other topics, of course, that I need to get into today. Let me just get to my list, because I always keep a list here. Andy Griffin, Jeremiah Wright's going to be in the D.C. area. I'd also like to talk about the new zombie craze that is going on. I don't think I've ever heard these stories like this ever before in my life. This whole bath salts and chemical something and marijuana and biting people. I'ma eat you. It's a real crazy thing going on in our country today. I think Miami, we had a guy whose face was gnawed off before police shot and killed the guy who was eating him. Really, really strange phenomenon, I guess would be, lack of a better term, with these people who are that have turned to cannibalism. I mean, here's my question, folks. Has the economy gotten so bad? Has the job market gotten so horrible that people can no longer afford regular food, that they are now resorting to eating each other and not in a good way? Have things gotten so goddamn bad that they cannot buy a Little Debbie snack cake and instead they are snacking on everyday people? Has the homeless problem gotten so bad that instead of asking you for a dollar, they just wrap your ass up and take out a huge chunk? Has it gotten that bad? Has Obama created such a depression? I mean, for crying out loud. I know when things were really, really hard in the late 70s, the robbery rate was crazy. Home invasions were crazy. I mean, I remember that era. When the home invasions and the robberies, the burglaries were just astronomical because people just couldn't survive. But has it gotten to the point now where, look, I can't ask a person for a dollar because he probably doesn't have it in this horrible economy? Let's just eat him. I mean, what the hell is going on? I'm sorry. This is the only thing I can think of that would compel somebody to take a chunk out of your skin. I don't care how pretty a girl is. You know, I don't care. I mean, have you ever heard the term a girl looking delicious? Yeah, sure. I've seen plenty of beautiful, delicious looking young ladies. But I never wanted to eat her arm. I just never did. I don't know where this cannibalism is coming from. I mean, clearly most of these people they're finding are on drugs or have some sort of mental disease. My bigger question is has this been hidden for a long time and we're just hearing about it? I haven't heard one story in the mainstream media about it. The only reason why I know about these stories is because of the alternative media. But these stories are amazing. How do you not cover these stories? People are out the street eating each other? Like buffets? How is that? how is that not newsworthy? I mean, talking to witnesses like, yeah, he had him on the ground and just started chewing away. I mean, yes, this is compelling. People were driving by the Miami situation. They were driving by it and taking pictures. I was like, hey, stop that, Bob, slow down. Is he eating that guy's face? Hold on, let me take a picture of this. I got to get this on YouTube. Come on! How is the mainstream media not covering this? I mean, I understand there's a gross-out effect, you know, a gross-out part of this that you don't want to get into, but how is this not a story? I want to go to this page, because Drudge Report has been covering it often, and it's where I've gotten most of the stories on this. I want to get the actual, some people have video of some of this stuff that's going on. Video, here it is. Video. Man high on synthetic spice goes on naked ninja rampage. Apparently some zombie cannibal, I'ma eat you. A severed head thought to belong to Canadian cannibal's butchered lover found in park. A pregnant woman bites off boyfriend's fingertip. How are these stories not... These stories... I mean, not that they should dominate the news. But come on. I mean, these are stories people want to read. You know? Whatever happened to if it bleeds, it leads in the news media. I thought that was what this is about. If it bleeds, it leads. This is a poor woman about to have a baby. And she's eating... a boyfriend's fingertip. Well, apparently this is during a violent confrontation. Happened in Tampa. Hold on. I've got to wait for this to boot up so I can actually. But what it says so far, it says a pregnant woman bit off part of her boyfriend's finger during a violent confrontation at their Tampa home today, according to the Hillsborough County deputies. The two got into an argument which turned physical shortly before 6 p.m., at an apartment on Hensay Lane. According to a sheriff's statement, the boyfriend, 22-year-old Reginald Jeffrey, armed himself with a knife and pointed it at the 22-year-old Junie Juzante. I'm not pronouncing that. It sounds Haitian to me. While in their bathroom, the fight continued into the bedroom where Guffrey blocked the door with the dresser. Okay, he was running. He was running. Now, they're saying that he had a knife. They're saying that he armed himself with a knife and pointed it at 22-year-old Junie. While in their bathroom, the fight continued into their bedroom where Jeffrey blocked the door with a dresser. He's blocking the door. The defendant then grabbed the victim by the neck with one hand. Whoa, wait a minute. Hold on. Now, this is sounding confusing. They say the defendant then grabbed the victim by the neck, one hand pushing her up against the wall, and then punching her in the face. But why was he running into the bedroom, blocking the door with a suitcase? I mean, with a dresser. At that point, they say the girlfriend bit the tip of Jeffrey's middle finger on his right hand in self-defense. He was taken to a Florida hospital with lacerations. Something's wrong with this story. I hate it when they do this. I'm completely confused. Now I don't know who did what. He's in the bathroom, then he's in the bedroom, he's blocking the door with a dresser. She bites off the finger. He's got her by the throat with a knife, folks. She's supposed to be in fear of her life, but she bites the tip of his finger off. He ends up in a hospital. Bitch, bite off your finger. Why didn't he stab her? Now, I'm not suggesting that he did, or he would have, or he should have. My point is, you're supposed to be the guy, the aggressor here, right? You're telling her, don't you dare move. Don't you dare freaking move. You stay right there. Bites off your finger. Ah, bitch! Stab, 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 stab. Right? She bites off the tip of his finger. What did he do? He fell down like a sucker? He fell to the ground like a punk bitch? Hit the ground crying? He's big, tough guy with a knife holding a pregnant woman. All it takes is the tip of his middle finger on his right hand to bring this man to his knees. Story's convoluted. I don't believe it. JC, I'm not out of my mind, am I?
Wow. Where are we in?
What's that?
Punk bitch. He's a punk bitch.
Yeah, come on, man. Even if he is a punk bitch, for crying out loud, this story is convoluted. I think the press is pulling the wool over our eyes. This is drive-by reporting at its best. The bottom line is that he's in the bathroom. Why is he in a bedroom blocking the door with a dresser? To keep her in? All they have to do is stand in front of the door. He's got a knife, folks. Pay attention. Pay attention. He's got a knife. That's why I couldn't even understand how they're writing this. Let's break this down again.
It sounds like something off of Guiding Light.
I know, but listen to the way they're explaining the story. It's backwards. It says a pregnant woman bit off part of her boyfriend's finger during a violent confrontation at their Tampa home. The two got into an argument, which turned physical shortly after 6 p.m. According to the sheriff's statement, the boyfriend, whose name is Reginald, armed himself with a knife. Now, arming yourself with a knife can mean several things. To protect yourself or to go after the person, right? They say he pointed it at the 22-year-old Junie while in their bathroom. Now, first of all, he pulled out a knife in a bathroom. Okay? The fight continued into the bedroom where Reginald Jeffrey blocked the door with a dresser. For what? They don't even explain. The defendant then grabbed the victim by the neck with one hand, pushing her up against the wall and punching her in the face with a knife in his hands, folks. You see my point? At that point, Junie bit the tip of Reginald's middle finger on his right hand in self-defense. He's got a balled up fist, and he's got another hand holding her against the wall. The story's too convoluted to me. I don't believe it. I can't trust the newspapers to even tell me the freaking deal. It's annoying.
That actually sounds like something that I heard from my cousin, who heard from her cousin on her third on her fifth uncle's side, who said that they heard somebody who said something about that yesterday at a McDonald's.
Yeah, that's exactly what it sounds like. Whatever. Bottom line is that it sounds horrible. It sounds bogus. But, you know, that's it. What are you going to do? Anyway, we'll take a break. When we come back, I got some more news about Barack Hussein Obama. And at 9 o'clock, I'm going to explain why the 4th of July is one of the most polarizing holidays ever this year. Let me get back to some of it. And you'd be stunned at some of the people who call up to spend some time with Reese on the radio. He is the godfather of entertainment, Mr. Michael Lohan. Mr. Lohan!
Reese, I have to stop laughing before we continue. I don't know how to respond to this. Am I in the Twilight Zone?
you are in the Twilight Zone. On the phone with us right now on Reese on the Radio is the connoisseur of the Hollywood biz, the father of the famed actress Lindsay Lohan. Mr. Michael Lohan is on the show on Reese on the Radio. Thank you for joining us today, sir.
No, thanks for having me, Reese. It's going to be a lot of fun, I can tell already.
Oh, man, you have no idea how much fun we're going to have today. It's Reese on the Radio, weeknights, right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mary, Mary, why you bugging?
James, you're on the air?
Yep.
Before you say anything, you are just going to come clean right now. okay? I'd like to know the adult beverage you're enjoying.
The adult beverage? Yeah, I'm drinking beer.
What kind of beer are you drinking, James? Is it a 211?
Oh, yes.
You're drinking a 211?
Yes.
You're drinking 211 Steel Reserve.
Right now.
The reason why it's called Steel Reserve, and it's called 211 for that matter, is that the police code, 211, means robbery in progress.
And don't let me tell you what that 211 has stolen from you tonight, my man.
It's Reese on the Radio, weeknights, right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started. Spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the five states where Obama's attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership are all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hey,
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said, because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
This is the real state of our union. But you won't hear stories like those at President Obama's address tonight. The unemployed don't get tickets to sit next to the First Lady. Instead tonight, the President will do what he does best. He'll give a nice speech.
The idea of America endures.
A lot of memorable phrases in it.
That our future is hopeful.
But he won't give you the hard numbers.
Our journey goes forward, and the state of our union is strong.
Three years ago, we measured candidate Obama by his hopeful promises and his slogans. Today, President Obama has amassed an actual record of debt, decline, and disappointment. I'd use the State of the Union to lay out an agenda that will get our country back on track and get our fiscal house in order. We need to nominate someone who is an experienced leader, who has the qualities of leadership, the character, the judgment, the seriousness, the sobriety, the capacity demonstrated time and time again as a leader to help guide our party at a critical time and make sure that we hold on to the House, that we capture the Senate, and that we get back the White House and restore to America what is rightfully ours. A great nation, united, free, and prosperous for our kids and for their kids. Thank you so very much.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on the Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
All over my face. What is a boy to do?
President Barack Obama named himself one of the country's four best presidents. Better than George Washington, John F. Kennedy, and even Ronald Reagan. But Mr. President was just being modest. He's in fact America's best president at piling on debt. So good that he has managed to pile on nearly as much debt as all the previous presidents combined. All he needed was just 4 years to outspend 220 years of history. We can't afford four more years of America's best president.
Warning, the sound you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
After the hour on this July the 3rd, 2012, 4th of July is tomorrow. Expecting to have a very, very interesting 4th of July. I'm going to be spending it with a co-worker, someone I've actually worked with for the last couple of weeks. Seems like a nice enough guy. But I will definitely let you guys know on Thursday whether or not he's straight whack. And I will tell you all the details of this niggerific event that I will be attending on July 4th.
Yeah, we will both be attending.
That's right, because Mary's actually coming by as my chaperone to make sure I don't either get in trouble or get shot or, you know, or get into a confrontation. She will be coming down to make sure that I am...
Or say the wrong thing around black folks.
Yeah, that I have to keep him tamed around black people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Don't say that, Reese. You know how they're going to react.
Well, it's people here in this area.
Yeah, she's been trying to learn me a little bit about the Negroes in the Virginia and D.C. and Maryland area. And I constantly say, I don't give a damn. Because
wow.
As far as I'm concerned, they need to get a grip, not me. If I say the word Negro, they don't need to flip it, you know, lose their mind when they hear it.
Well, you kind of got to understand that you're a little bit out of your element.
Well, I know that I'm out of my element. I know that the, you
and
know.
And I'm right in my element, which is
yeah,
so
Mary's,
odd.
Yeah, Mary's been around these people long enough to know what it is that they like and they don't like, but I don't care. I don't care. I never did. I'd rather get thrown out of a spot, you know. For being an ass than, you know, than trying to be phony around these people. I don't care. They know what they were getting into. They invited me.
Well, I mean, they're thinking that they were nice enough to invite you, so go there and behave your damn self.
What is that supposed to mean? Oh, now I have to behave myself?
No. Well, yeah, you're right. Yeah, right. Behave your damn self.
Okay.
When in Rome, do it to Romans.
I promise I will not. But remember, I'm just letting everybody know. If my personality or if I'm attacked first, if somebody attacks my personality first, if somebody comes after me and makes some comment about me being white bread, somebody turns around and makes a comment about me being less than black, the fireworks will begin before nightfall.
You know, that's kind of what I expected. That's what I kind of expected when I brought you home. Really. I was gonna figure you'd, where's your bathroom? You're going to head to the bathroom. Everybody's going to turn to me and be like, where did you get this Carlton Banks ass nigga from?
Exactly.
But that didn't happen.
Now, see, I know that this guy who I work with, okay, his name is Ron. I know that he has been ripping me for the longest. When, you know, I was ragging on the BET Awards yesterday. First thing he said to me was, what were you doing watching BET? Shouldn't you have been watching the Country Music Channel? That's what he said. So I know he's going to go around his family, and he's going to love telling them, oh, Reese is one of them. He's one of them watermelon men. That's his big line now. He calls me the watermelon man based upon this old movie about this white man who wakes up one morning and finds out that he's black. He calls me. He always brings it up every day. So I know he's going to be all around his black friends and his black family, and he's going to feel empowered to make some comment about me being quote-unquote too white and not black enough. Now me... Don't paint me into a corner
where you get to just bash me and I don't come back. Now, I come from, JC, I always say it, I come from the school of hard knocks. I am from Hater Nation.
You're talking about the best.
Exactly. I create Hater Nation. That's absolutely true. I come from the school of hate. I am a student in the school of hate and created Hater Nation.
Yeah, listen, I don't mean don't walk in there and like have a big slice of watermelon in one hand and fried chicken in the other and taking bites off of each.
We should do it.
I came to bring the Negro's offering. But I'm not coming. This is the school that I come from. See, this is always who I've been. Let me just find this monologue real quick. Wait, here it is. I know I got it here.
He has her on again, or is this a repeat?
It's a repeat. Hold on. I got to find this because this is the school of thought that I come from. Now, I know President Obama has been criticized for this way of thought, but I thought of it first. And this is the way that I live.
What are you prepared to do? Everything within the law.
And then what are you prepared to do? If you open the ball on these people, you must be prepared to go all the way. Because they won't give up the fight until one of you is dead.
I don't know how to get him.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way. Now, do you want to do that? Are you ready to do that?
And I'm always ready to do that, JC. And they bring a knife, I bring a gun. Send one of mine to the hospital, I send one of yours to the morgue. It's always been my way since the mid-90s. My brother used to make fun of me. I'll never forget it. My brother made fun of me one day. He tried to play a joke. Excuse me. Woo! I sneezed. He tried to play a joke on me. He changed my beer from a full beer to an empty beer. And I went to go pick up the beer. And the beer only had a little bit in it, and it spilled on me, and he thought that was funny. I opened up a brand new beer, and I poured it on him. He looked at me like I was crazy. He was like, what the hell was that for? I said, whoa. You can crack a joke. Now you don't like it when I go deep. It's like, yeah, but you didn't have to go that far. I don't play fair. Once you get the ball rolling, you slap me, I shoot you. You shoot me, I drop a building on you. I mean, I got to find another way. And that's just the way I do it. I'm saying, I know that's vicious. But I never play fair, especially if you initiate. Now, I'm going to go there and I'm going to be nice. I'm going to go there and I'm going to be cordial. I'm going to say hello to all the little children. I'm going to say hello to Mammy and Pappy. I'm going to be nice to them. I'm going to speak well. I'm going to be who it is that Reese is. And then one person has to make a comment about me being some Oreo or vanilla or what's up with your boy and how come he talks like that. And the first thing I'll ask him is how many chitlins he had this weekend. That's it. That's all I have to do. What's your problem, nigger? You can't deal with a black man speaking English? Does that confuse you? Did that frighten you? Does the white man make you wet your pants? What's your problem, nigger? That is when I will let loose.
I've never had grilled chitlins before.
I will be removed from the party. Mary will escort me out. Okay?
They'll probably be like, he gotta go, but you can stay.
Turncoat ass niggas. They would say that because they probably say that Mary's blacker than me.
Oh, they will.
They already have. They already
have. At what point are we going to get our pig feet on a stick?
But yes, that's very, very typical of what I expect.
But I ain't that damn black.
And I don't know how many people are coming to this shindig. I'm sure there are plenty. But when they get there, I'm going to keep to myself. Ron will come by now and again. Come on, and he'll want to introduce me to his friends and have me talk to them.
because he thinks that I'm some sort of anomaly. Oh, you got to listen to this guy talk. He's real. He's one of them smart asses. You know what I'm saying? He think he know everything.
One of them house niggas.
Yeah, he's one of them house niggas who think they know everything. I know what I'm going to be. I'm going to be the spectacle of the night. But they will rue the day. Rue the day. The first thing I'm going to say to them, don't open that can. Don't open that can. There are no worms in there. There's only venomous snakes. There's only venomous snakes.
Large venomous.
And you will not be able to deal. Now, if I say something that offends you, what are you going to do? You're going to get up in arms and you're going to want to fight, right? All right? That's what I have to do. But I'm expecting to have a great story where I would have had some black ribs, some black chicken.
I hope somebody's making some homemade black macaroni and cheese.
Yes, they're probably going to be. Of course they're making macaroni and cheese.
Somebody got some cornbread.
It's in the Negro rulebook at the
cookbook. I got peas and cornbread. Oh, God.
You're not asking for a potato salad? Don't the Negroes love that as well?
White people like that, too.
Really? I can't find a white folk.
I love potato salad. My family eats potato salad.
Yes, which. Okay.
No, I'm the only black one out of the family. The rest
are
of
you nuts?
What? Are you saying
dude,
potato salad?
That's how I won my in-laws over with potato salad.
Yes, your in-laws did have potato salad.
No, you're
absolutely right.
I won them over with it. I won them over with the potato salad. Oh, you're feeling great over there. It was just that when you first came to on Graham Road. When my sister sick her dog on you.
Yeah, that's right.
Why did your sister sick her
because
dog?
Because, of course, I was on the radio. She knew who I was.
Uh-huh.
And everybody, again, what do you think? You,
they didn't like you, so they sick, they stuck
a
dog on you?
No. The thing is, he's a Yorkshire Terrier with a real Napoleon complex. And the minute you open the door, he comes out and goes after the biggest thing he could find and reads.
But they opened the door purposely when I came by because, of course, I incite certain emotions from people. That's what I'm here to do, make these Negroes angry.
You make people crazy.
I love that. I love that. It's who I am.
And by the end of the night, they were loving them.
Okay, exactly. Once you get to know me, you love me.
Your connection, there's something up with your connection.
Oh, is it?
Well, yeah, a little bit.
Doesn't matter anyway. I want to go to a break because I got to go into, wow, I'm forgetting this now. But I need to go into the 4th of July conversation I wanted to have, or at least the monologue that I needed to get into about why the 4th of July this year is so polarizing and why is it that more and more people have no respect for the birth of this nation 236 years ago tomorrow. And a lot of people don't know that. You ask some of these morons, they don't even know that the country is only 236 years old.
Well, they can't even tell you who we were fighting with.
Yeah, I know. But it's sad, but, you know, we'll get into all of that when we get back. Stick around. It's Reese on the Radio, and we'll be back shortly.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Out of respect, they gave him the Nobel Peace Prize without him doing anything, and he took it. He changed healthcare for millions of Americans, even though they liked what they had. He says he will tell Iran to quit making nukes, and they will stop. Because he is just that good. To him, the Supreme Court is nothing but an unelected group of people. You want president? He is the president. He picked Joe Biden to be his vice president just to show that he doesn't really need one. He wants us to believe no one else in America would have made the Bin Laden call. He is the most arrogant man in the world. I ultimately get what I want. Stay ignorant, my friends.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you'd be stunned at some of the people who call up to spend some time with Reese on the Radio. He is the godfather of entertainment, Mr. Michael Lohan.
Reese, I have to stop laughing before we continue. I don't know how to respond to this. Am I in the Twilight Zone?
you are in the Twilight Zone. On the phone with us right now on Reese on the Radio is the connoisseur of the Hollywood biz, the father of the famed actress Lindsay Lohan. Mr. Michael Lohan is on the show on Reese on the Radio. Thank you for joining us today, sir.
No, thanks for having me, Reese. It's going to be a lot of fun, I can tell already.
Oh, man, you have no idea how much fun we're going to have today. It's Reese on the Radio, weeknights, right here on blogtalkradio.com.
President Obama promised us his health care law.
Is absolutely not a tax increase.
Now we know that's not true. Obama's health care law is actually one of the largest tax increases in history. Shouldn't Obama's priorities have been creating jobs and ending reckless spending? Instead, he focused on a $2 trillion health care takeover that we have to pay for. How can we afford this tax? We're already struggling. Tell Obama, repeal the health care law and pass patient-centered reform.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and let me tell you something. Nothing makes my job more perfect than interacting with you, the listeners of the Reese on the Radio show. Eric, you're on with Reese.
Hey, first of all, I want to say that you are very refreshing, my friend.
Thank you, Eric.
I do think there's too much emphasis on the race card.
Sure.
I'm sick of people who want to be treated exactly like everybody else, as long as we recognize that they're different.
Yes, that's it. Chris, you're on with Reese.
Yes, hi, Reese. I just had to rebuff that guy that called you and said your arguments were weak.
Sure.
He's basing his vote on something you said, and he's talking about
my arguments weak, right?
Yeah, what a hypocrite. Well, I hope he's still listening. Buddy, you're a hypocrite. You shouldn't even be allowed to vote.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate it. Steve, you're on with Reese.
Hey, Reese, I got to compliment you. You were wonderful handling that guy who was going to base his whole decision on something you said, which you handled it well. I think you just sealed the deal with the listeners, and you're doing a wonderful job. That's all I wanted to say.
Steve, thank you very, very much, and I appreciate that. It's Reese on the Radio right here, 8 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com. Now, you're probably wondering, why the hell am I playing Jermaine Stewart? The word is out. Okay. Thank God JC put that song inside the system. Because Anderson Cooper has come out of the closet. Anderson Cooper of Anderson, what is it?
Anderson 360.
Is it Anderson Cooper 360?
It's Anderson 360.
Oh, whatever. I don't watch it.
I didn't even know that that was even a secret.
That's what I said.
I had no idea that he was gay. I don't follow him, but I had no idea. Because I don't follow him.
No. But I'm saying, just from what you know about him, how could you not think he was gay?
What?
It was like not knowing George Michael was.
He looks like a metrosexual.
Name one girlfriend.
I don't. But I don't keep up with that.
I'm just. But okay, you ever?
I don't know that much about him to even be able to name a friend.
But you know what really gave it away for me? His really, really weird relationship with Kathy Griffin, who is an admitted fag.
Yeah, she gets on there.
But she is admitted fag.
She looks great, but she gets on there.
And she's always with him. I mean, they do the New Year's Eve show on CNN.
every year. They're really, really close. They hang out at each other's houses in Long Island. They're really, really involved with one another's friends. So I,
see, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
So if I would have known that, then maybe I would have been able to say, ah,
his mother,
my bulb goes off.
His mother is Gloria Vanderbilt.
I didn't know that.
You did not know that?
I don't know. All I know is that he has a show.
Oh, okay. You
that
did
his
not,
name is
you,
Anderson Cooper, and he has a show. That's all I know.
Yes, his mother.
Really?
You didn't didn't know that either about Gloria Vanderbilt?
Yeah, I know about Gloria Vanderbilt, but I mean, I thought that he came out a long time ago.
Well,
didn't at one point he try saying he was black as well?
I don't really recall that one.
What was it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I recall that one too.
That he was part black?
Who is
yeah.
that now? That the teacher up in
Oh, Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah. Has he been chilling with Elizabeth Warren?
Yeah, funny. You know, it's interesting that you guys mentioned that. You know, there's another story in I think it's Chicago. Is it Detroit or Chicago? I'm almost certain it's Detroit. But there's a story in Detroit about this guy running for office. And I had the story right in front of me. Why am I missing it now? But apparently there's this big issue about this guy who claims that he was black, his parents were black. And I'm seeing this is starting to become a trend where everybody is saying that they're black, that they have black roots, or they have some sort of minority roots. Like, what is that about? I never heard this Anderson Cooper.
Everything in this country is geared towards minorities.
Yes, in order for you to be down, you got to, you have.
No, in order for you to be down and get a job.
Yeah,
if you want to get a job in a government, if you want to get a job in any type of state agency, if you want to get, you know, if it's not a private a big private sector job, then yeah. If you got roots of something other than white that you can put down.
So you're saying that
course.
People are denouncing their whiteness?
Hey, I denounced mine a long time ago.
I mean renounce, I guess the better
no,
word
I
is renounce.
Denounce. I denounced it. I hereby denounce my whiteness. No, I'm kidding.
I think that's becoming very popular now. I never heard this story about Anderson Cooper. JC, are you certain that there's a story where he said that he was part black?
JC.
Yeah, I'm almost certain I heard that somewhere before. I'm looking it up right now.
Okay, I thought.
He's got African American roots.
But it couldn't be on his mother's side.
And you know what? You know what I think I heard it on?
Mm-hmm.
I'm almost certain I heard it on the Steve Harvey Morning Show.
Really?
Yeah, you know, Steve usually doesn't have anybody unless they're black.
Well,
and
know,
Anderson is always on.
They don't. I can't say that the Steve Harvey Morning Show always tells the truth. I listen to him every day.
Well,
but
no. I'm not saying that he always tells the truth.
Anderson's always
really,
on the show.
He
I've never.
Everybody who's ever on the show is black. He never have. He very, very, very rarely he'll have anybody white on the show.
Yeah, you're absolutely
and
right.
Anderson,
maybe.
And Anderson's on quite a bit.
But maybe Anderson Cooper is giving him some special treatment.
Oh, that's just nasty.
She's something else.
I'm just saying. It's stuck in the sink.
Looks like we got a visitor.
What,
who
that?
I think is half black. We got a visitor who I think is half black.
You really do? Mike in Florida.
You people really don't think that the ultimate blue blood Anderson Cooper has any Negro in him, do you?
That's exactly what I was going to say. I said the Vanderbilt.
He's a friggin' Vanderbilt.
That's what I'm saying. He's a Vanderbilt. If there's some blackness in him, was it suggested that it was on his father's side, that it was paternal?
His father was a writer from a prominent family in Mississippi. So, I mean, if you're from Mississippi, I suppose maybe if you go back to the plantation days, there's a possibility, but I don't think there's anything black in Anderson Cooper. Now, he might have had some black put in him from time to time. You know, 7 inches at a time. Oh, but
that is scary.
But you know,
I mean, go ahead, Mike.
I think Anderson Cooper is going to kind of go the Neil Patrick Harris, Ellen DeGeneres route, where nobody's going to give a crap that he's gay.
No, yeah, but I mean, I think the reason why is because there's people like him. I let's take Ellen DeGeneres for instance. I think that there was always that undertone that they were gay. You understand what I'm saying? I'm like,
yeah, but
that,
nobody believed that Rosie O'Donnell was really in love with Tom Cruise, right? And
well,
her career's over.
Exactly.
Rosie's done. And it's because she's a bitch.
Well, that's true. But, you know, Rosie O'Donnell always had that personality that was sort of very asexual.
Yeah, you remember watching her, you know, pretend to love Tom Cruise?
Every day on her Rosie O'Donnell show.
Like, really? But we know you don't like Tom Cruise.
Well,
there was nothing believable about that.
But wait a minute. But if the rumors are true about Tom Cruise being gay, that would make better sense, wouldn't it?
You know, I was on the fence about the Tom Cruise being gay thing, but, you know, it's starting to kind of ring true, man.
Listen,
it seems kind of gay.
When you lose chicks like Nicole Kidman, Penelope Cruz, and now Katie Holmes.
Let's not forget he was married to Mimi Rogers.
And Mimi Rogers.
He was hot and told
right.
her he couldn't have sex with her because he had to keep his instrument pure.
That's right.
What?
Mimi Rogers. You're absolutely right, Mike. Mimi Rogers said that they stopped having sex because he kept saying that he had to keep his instrument pure. Now, a lot of people wanted to attribute that to...
What does he mean by instrument pure?
His body. His body.
His ability to act.
Yeah, his ability to act.
Doing all
now,
that, having sex, distract him from getting into the role or whatever.
Right.
He
and not
playing basketball.
But wait. But no. Here's the interesting part. Now, most people would say, oh, maybe that's because of his Scientology teachings. But here's the part.
He wasn't studying Scientology at that time.
She introduced him to Scientology.
Well,
so for her to even, for him to even use that line on her would almost be like calling her a harlot in essence was saying, you know, she introduces him to Scientology, and then he tells her, you don't really follow the teachings, and he becomes, you know, the grand poobah while she is straying away. You know what I mean? And he pretty much starts to call her out.
He is de facto number two in the Church of Scientology, they say.
This is true.
Right behind that David Miscavige.
Yeah. And I hear, you know who makes great fun of them? Steve Martin in that movie Bowfinger.
The one with Eddie Murphy?
Yes. And he calls them, they're called Mind something, but Steve Martin keeps referring to them as Mine F.
Oh, they're wacky, man. There is no doubt those people are nuts. I mean, even for a religion, they're kind of kooky.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm frightened by everybody involved. Even Geraldo, I heard Geraldo said the other day that Scientology is protecting its gay members.
I don't even know anything about that.
I don't think they protect their gay members so much as they get enough dirt on their gay members to hold them hostage basically forever, like John Travolta.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't that L. Ron Hubbard's situation?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
hey,
oh,
L. Ron
yeah,
Hubbard made it up in the 50s.
Okay, it's funny. It's funny because, you know what? I used to look at that damn book in paperback on my father's side of the bed on his nightstand.
Oh, Dianetics.
Damn near throughout the 70s.
Yeah, Dianetics.
Yep, seen it myself. Several times in several people's houses.
When your religion is headed by a science fiction writer, that should be a big freaking alarm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Can you imagine if George Lucas or Gene Roddenberry had done the same thing?
You know, it's a good story. I mean, if you know the hidden stuff they tell the Scientologists once they hit operating Satan level 3, it's actually a pretty interesting science fiction tale. Galactic Overlord Xenu banished all his enemies to Earth in DC-7-looking space planes, then put them all in volcanoes and blew them up with hydrogen bombs. then their spirits left their bodies and went into the cavemen. So that's why people have unpleasant emotions and negative feelings and all that, because they're possessed by the souls of dead space aliens.
Nope, can't get into it, sorry.
Yeah.
I'm a science fiction fan, still can't get into that one.
And then when you go to the Scientology Center and get audited with their e-meter lie detector, basically that's to get the spirits out of you, but it's really a way for them to blackmail you and learn your secret.
Yeah, sounds right. Sounds about right to me. We'll be back. The polarization of the 4th of July and why more and more people are denouncing their American citizenship and why when we get back on Recent Radio.
All right, ladies, buckle up. It's showtime.
How may I help you, my brother?
Look, I'm here because I can't stand what's happening in this community.
Yes.
Yeah, and somebody has to make a change.
Yes.
Now, brother, will you help me?
Yes, I will.
I wish I could. Damn it, man, I heard the People's Revolutionary Army was once 1,000 strong. Now, what happened?
They got government jobs.
The brothers walked in with guns,
came out with jobs.
The brothers weren't mad anymore.
Yes, Whitey is something else.
We're back at Teresa on the Radio, 1 minute after the hour on blogtalkradio.com. It is July the 3rd, 2012. So tomorrow is the 4th of July. And the 236th birthday of this great nation, who I can clearly tell that there are a lot of people out in the country who do not feel the same way. They believe that this country is evil, that this country is vicious, that it stole this country, yes, all over the place. It is now more often than any time in my life that I've seen people hate America. But they do it sort of even-handedly.
But isn't it crazy how, if you think about how Americans were so proud to be Americans after 9/11. And how, you know, there was just a craze of it was so great to be an American. Everybody wanted to show their support for all the lives that were lost, for all the men and women that were going into war because of this, you know, massive terror attack. And now, in this, with this administration, I think people have hated, have like denounced their Americanism more in this with this president than ever before.
I somewhat agree with you, but I don't think it started with Barack Obama. I do believe that it started after 2004, maybe even 2005. I believe it was the re-election of George W. Bush and when the real sort of change started to happen. And you're absolutely right. September 11th was a defining moment in the American culture on when it is that we really started to recognize that we're all in this together. But it was after the Iraq War and that major conflict where people were dying and the press were constantly talking about how many troop members were dying. I had a conversation with you about this a couple of days ago, I'm almost certain. Oh, in fact, no, when we were driving from New York, I talked to you about this when I said, one of the things that happened in this country during that time was that the average adult, and we're not talking about seniors or the baby boomers. They're, you know, they're hitting their 60s. You know, my mom was in the baby boomer generation. She's 63. My mom was alive for the Vietnam War, but they're older. But the average adult today is anywhere between, you know, 25 and maybe, as we always say, 25 to 54. We always talk about that market when we talk about media. Well, that market has never, ever seen any major conflict. in their natural born lives. So seeing an actual war to them when they never lived through wartime like that, you even said, what about the Gulf War? Well, the Gulf War was 44 days. It's not major conflict. 144, 145 people died during that conflict. It was nothing to them. It was in, it was out. It covered the news, but it was done and over with in such a short time. So for a war to last for 10 years, I think Derek the Bounty Hunter even called here and said that. You know, my nephew, he's been, every year that he's been alive, he's seen war. Well, okay, he's not seen war, but yes, the country has been in a war. And I understand that. But this generation has never known major conflict since they were children. So having to deal with it is tough. And now when you have those people beating the drum of colonialism, you know, oh, we're going to other countries and we're occupying them. No proof of that. But you got women like Cindy Sheehan, who's walking around the country talking about how America's evil, how America's evil. You got these young kids who are being taught by these Ivy League schools about imperialism of the United States of America. In essence, saying the United States is using its power against all of these poorer nations. I combat that by saying, this nation is 236 years old. Many people will argue the reason why we're the greatest nation is because we stole everything. Well, there's no proof of that. There's no proof of it. There's only innuendo. Oh, we stole everything. You know, we stole this country from the American Indians. Well, what were they doing with it? Seriously, would you be in a position that you're in today had this country not been purchased? I mean, would you be in a position you are today had it have been that quote-unquote utopia you believed that the American Indian was living in when their life expectancy was 19 years?
Well, the logical thing to think is, okay, you know, we're at war. We're, you know, war has to happen.
Because tyranny is everywhere. That's right, because tyranny is everywhere.
It's a part of life. As unfortunate as it is, it's a part of life. But these same people that are spewing this rhetoric about how messed up the United States is, go to another country and see how messed up it is over there.
And again,
go to Iran. Go to Iraq. Go to Afghanistan. Go to India. Go to China.
If they really, really believe that this country is so evil and it's bad to its citizens, that, and I agree with you 100%, go to those countries and see how it is that they live. And find out whether or not you'd be happy to be back home. And they would. That's why I think these are cowards.
Even as bad as it is.
But these are cowards who say that. They live in this country. They benefit from its goods. And then they bash it. But you know what? That's fine that they do. It's fine. You know, look, you have the right to do that in this country. But I see the polarization more today than I ever have. Here's where I see it the most. In the ignorant, the uneducated, and the minority. And largely in blacks and Latinos. Largely. They are the ones in this country who do not respect it, do not care for it, and do not wish to fight for it. Because the only thing that they think is that the country owes them something for being, just existing. And I think that tomorrow, what will make me laugh more than anything, when we go to this barbecue tomorrow, what will make me laugh is how many of these black people who will be there at this little shindig, this little barbecue, how many of them will be outdoors doing the American pastime of grilling, you know, hot dogs and hamburgers and ribs and everybody getting together eating and enjoying food together, and then firing off fireworks, that they would turn around and then say something as ridiculous as, I don't like this country. I will follow all of its symbols. I will do every one of those cliche things that we do on the 4th of July, but I will not respect the United States of America. But hey, you got those red, white, and blue Roman candles? I mean, come on.
You celebrating? What are you celebrating?
Yeah, exactly. What are you celebrating? If this is nothing more than a day off, screw the pageantry.
screw the symbolism, screw the cookout, screw the fireworks display, cut off the TV, maybe get some bills paid, maybe clean the house, you know, maybe redo the shingles. What bothers me is that I know that next week I'm going to be asking everyone I know, hey, do you love America? They'll say, no, I don't love this country, and then I'll ask them, what did you do for the 4th of July? And I'm sure they're going to tell me they went to a cookout. I'm sure they're going to tell me that they popped off some fireworks. All those things that are associated with the holiday, they would have engaged in. Yeah, I blew off some fireworks and had the cookout, but, you know, I didn't raise no flag or salute nobody. Which is bull, bottom line. The reason why these people feel this way is because they believe that the United States of America owes them something. They believe that this country owes them something for being alive. They believe that the country owes them something because they're black. Because they're black, they're immediately a part of a group of disenfranchised people. JC, don't say anything yet. Give me a second. I'm going to let you chime in. Give me a couple of seconds. I'll let you chime in. They believe they're a part of a group that they've never been a part of. You've never been a slave. Never been. I don't care what it is your great-great-great-great-great-grandfather went to. I don't care how many beatings he got. I don't care how many bales of cotton he had to carry or pick. I don't care how many times your great-great-great-great-grandmother was raped by the white man. I don't care. You did not have that happen to you. And if you really, really want to associate yourself with your ancestors, really, really do. God, I'm about to say something vicious. If you really, really do, you want to associate with your ancestors, then go out there and avenge them. Find that white family that raped your great-great-great-grandmama and put a bullet between their eyes. Go out there and get vengeance. Don't ask for a dollar for your great-great-grandmama's rape. How stupid do you sound? Asking for a handout for the rape and pillaging of your people. You mean a dollar makes it go away? Let's be honest, ladies and gentlemen. Let's be honest. Whether you like what happened in this country or not, slavery was a horrible thing. But you didn't have to go through it. And you're not going through it. And if it's really, really holding you back, if it's really, really bearing down on your soul, go out there and get vengeance. It's easy to find. Google it. Go Google who raped your great-great-grandmama. Go Google who gave 40 slashes to your great-great-grandpapa and get vengeance. Other than that, shut your goddamn mouth. Get a job, raise your family, and salute to the mother effing flag. Or take your dumb ass to whatever foreign country you think you were a part of. How about tracing your ancestry and finding out whether or not your family was slave traders or slaves? How about finding that out? You want to do something memorable for the birth of the nation? Go find out whether or not your ancestors come from a long line of slave traders, you know, who gave up the black man to the white man for some frankincense and myrrh. Huh? How about finding that out? You really, really want to denounce your Americanism? Find out where you come from. Go find out whether or not your family will accept you back. And while I'm on that point, let me get to this one. Barack Hussein Obama's brother is still in Kenya. Barack Obama is in the United States. As the president of the United States, the guy made over, what, $5 million last year? And his brother is living in a hut. One of the only people in his village with running water. He didn't have the running water last year. So even a true African American ain't going back to his roots. He won't even go back and help the people. His father from Kenya, not removed from Kenya. You know what that Negro will be doing tomorrow? He'll be on the White House lawn celebrating the United States. That's what that Negro will be doing. That's what he'll be doing. While the rest of you are denouncing your citizenship. Now I'll let you go in, JC. We'll bring Mike in as well. JC, what'd you want to say?
Well, I was going to say basically the same argument can be made for even the Christmas holidays. You get people that don't believe in religion at all, but they'll celebrate Christmas.
That's right. Have no respect for God, but celebrate that gift given.
Oh, yeah, without question. Even Jehovah's Witnesses who denounce holidays will take the day off if given.
And they do winter gifts at Christmas time.
Yeah.
Right. They call them winter gifts. They don't call them Christmas. You know, I look at Christmas as a little different. Christmas has been so corrupted by commercialism that it's no longer about the fairy tale. It's about spending time with your family and giving them gifts so that they know you love them and all that.
Right.
So I give that one a pass. But 4th of July is about celebrating the concept of America.
Okay.
It's not about celebrating what America is now, because I'll tell you, let me out on the table, I'm a veteran. Okay, I'm not a wartime veteran, but I was in the Air Force for 4 years. I served my country. And I will tell you, people who say that America is the greatest country on earth just haven't been anywhere else, because there are places in this world that are a hell of a lot better than America. They're all in Scandinavia, but they're better than America. And if I'm going to define better, how do you define better? You define better by saying, where is the standard of living higher? And Sweden, Norway, Finland, Iceland blow us out of the water. Where is the crime lower? It's lower in Sweden, Norway, Finland. Where are the people taken care of better? All those countries. You know, I don't mind paying taxes at all.
Right.
I think it's your duty as an American to pay taxes. But the taxes that we pay don't come back to us the way it does in those countries. And those people aren't oppressed. You know, Sweden and Norway have a kind of a mixed economic system where they're capitalist, but they have sort of a socialist safety net. And they're fine. Those people are free. They're not oppressed by their government. It's not like Russia. But you also, if you pay taxes in Norway, you get free college. Okay, wherever you want to go, when you get to be old, they put you in a nice, top-of-the-line, state-run nursing home, not like the Medicaid hellholes we have here.
Right.
Now, America is not the utopia it should have been. You know, now, if you're going to go the Ron Paul route and say no income tax, hey, I'm fine. Let's do that. But if we're going to pay the taxes we pay, and we all pay a plethora of taxes, we don't get anything out of it except a bloated military. And how much is our national debt? How many trillion? They don't even know. Their estimate is $36 trillion. If all things were calculated correctly, it's our national debt is so high that it basically eclipses the total value of all federally owned properties in the country.
Well, and Mike, I agree with you there. I mean, you're making a very, very strong argument for what the problem is as far as our government. But as a country, as people, which is, in my belief, is supposed to be stronger than our government. You know what I mean? I mean, stronger. The will of the people should be stronger than our government. We have become a society where our government has become stronger than the will of the people. That's where, if that were their argument, if that were these people's argument, I would stand firmly behind it. But I would make the argument every day, then stop supporting this government in the fashion that they do. And these people do. They want more of it. That's their biggest right.
That I don't get, because those people aren't even paying taxes.
Exactly. It's like they believe that in order for this to be a great country, they want its government to have more control over their lives, to give them more stuff. I don't know how that could ever make you a great country when you, as a free people, should be more and more free, that you should be talking and dealing with how it is that you can be a freer nation.
I mean, I think that if you're going to be a citizen of a country and sacrifice in the name of that country like we're all expected to, we should get something out of it. And I've yet to see what I get from the government for the amount of taxes that I pay.
Yeah, that, again, agree with you 100%, is that we do not see the return on our investment, if you will.
No, and, you know, we've made some mistakes. And you look at these countries, you know, America is pretty much the only country on earth that didn't make the step to nationalize its natural resources. You know, the American people don't get squat from the oil reserves in this country. You know, the only ones who see any benefit are the Alaskans, and that's just because they basically shook down the oil companies to let them drill there. But, you know, I grew up in Louisiana, and Louisiana has massive oil reserves, and it's one of the poorest states in the nation. Those people don't get shit for their oil reserves.
Well, North Dakota now, I think that it was just a report recently that entire state is booming because of oil production. And
I don't think it's like Alaska, where every citizen gets a cut. You know, what's happening in North Dakota is it's like the gold rush. But if it's like Louisiana, you know, just because you happen to benefit from the rush, it's not like they're going to get you a $10,000 check every year like the Alaskans get either.
Right. But again, what I think that most of these people do, and that's why I say it's so hypocritical, is, you know, exactly as I said earlier, biggest argument is that in order for this, for these people, the ones that they're constantly crapping on this nation, are the people who are asking for more government control of their lives in order to make it a better place. They keep complaining that the government does nothing for them because they believe that America is the government. They believe that the essence of America is the United States government, and that should never be the case.
Well, I'll tell you, man, I almost left this country when I got out of the military. We're looking, 1991. Ooh. I moved here where my parents are. I didn't know anybody, small town, and I just had it. So I started thinking of places to go. And at the time, the place that seemed like it had the best weather and the strongest economy was South Africa. Right. That was when apartheid was still in effect and Mandela was in jail. The rand was worth something like $2. They needed people. So I spoke to the consulate, and they were more than happy to have me because I had a marketable skill. Then they let Mandela out of prison. And I said, I'm not going there. And I'm kind of glad I didn't. South Africa. You know, and you're talking about Africa. I mean, South Africa and Zimbabwe are a prime example of, God, it's going to sound bad, but how incompetent and incapable of running a functioning society Africans are. I mean, you talk about Obama's brother having a little running water. That's not uncommon there. You know, that entire continent is rushing headlong back to the Stone Age.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, some of those countries are living in the 19th century, if not earlier.
Well, if you look at South Africa, you know, the only thing keeping South Africa going is the fact that the De Beers company has diamond mines there.
Right.
And they're able to throw enough money at the corrupt governments to keep things going. But nobody's investing in South Africa, would you, if you were a multinational?
No.
You're going to spend money to build something there where it's, you know, a banana republic, basically? and help me in the store with the cool suits.
But let's go to the countries that you said are doing significantly better. You said it was – did you say Sweden?
Sweden, Norway, Finland. I used to throw Iceland in there, but Iceland kind of got screwed up in this recent global crisis of the economy.
Right.
It wasn't
right.
their fault. They got taken advantage of by outside forces. But all the Scandinavian countries are – they have a high standard of living. They have a long lifespan. They have happy people, even though their weather kind of sucks.
But could people here migrate to a place like Sweden? Could you or I or the average citizen migrate there?
I could and blend right in. I don't know about you.
That's my point exactly.
But, you know,
I do not.
A lot of it is that they're a very racially homogeneous society.
Right.
Okay? That fosters a sense of brotherhood. If everybody's Swedish or everybody's Icelandic, that's your brother. I don't know if people look at it like that in America. As a matter of fact, dealing with, what's his name, Hefe Cholo, whatever his name was
Hefe
last
Chulo,
night.
Hefe Cholo, yeah.
Which means in Spanish, boss pimp, by the way.
Right.
guys like that, you know, will never look at us all as one people. He's always going, he even breaks himself down as a Dominicano. He's not even a brother anymore.
Right.
So, I don't know. I mean, not that I think that anyone, that America should be racially homogeneous, but I think that that's a large part of what people use to divide themselves and set up an us versus them kind of mentality.
Yeah. Sadly enough, I mean, it's, you know, not that, you know, I wouldn't want to go to a Scandinavian country just to check it out. I hear the beer is okay.
Oh, yeah. And the food's pretty good, actually.
And the food's pretty good, too. I don't know. Anyway, we'll move on. Last half hour of the show coming up before the 4th of July weekend, 4th of July week or day, whatever we're calling it. The weather's about to get bad, and we'll have a discussion with Mary and her fear of thunder and lightning. When we return on the Sun Radio, Blog Talk Radio.
What would I be? I don't. I wanted to be the lion, you know, king of the jungle and all that. But I know that didn't work out. Snake is always good, you know, scare people. But I'll take the zebra, you know.
He's got game.
In honor of our zebra president, you know, black and white, white and black. That sounded like the Jeffersons, right? That sounded like George. I meant that. I love our president, but he's, you know, he's black and white. He appeals to all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm going for.
Good. Have you mentioned this to him, by the way? Because I wonder how he would react to
I don't
that
know.
Analogy you're making here.
You know. We ignore the president's whiteness, but it's there. It's there.
Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the 5 states where Obama's attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership are all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dude Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi,
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
This is the real state of our union. But you won't hear stories like those at President Obama's address tonight. The unemployed don't get tickets to sit next to the First Lady. Instead tonight, the President will do what he does best. He'll give a nice speech.
The idea of America endures.
A lot of memorable phrases in it.
That our future is hopeful.
But he won't give you the hard numbers.
Our journey goes forward, and the state of our union is strong.
Three years ago, we measured candidate Obama by his hopeful promises and his slogans. Today, President Obama has amassed an actual record of debt, decline, and disappointment. I'd use the State of the Union to lay out an agenda that will get our country back on track and get our fiscal house in order. We need to nominate someone who is an experienced leader, who has the qualities of leadership, the character, the judgment, the seriousness, the sobriety, the capacity demonstrated time and time again as a leader to help guide our party at a critical time and make sure that we hold on to the House, that we capture the Senate, and that we get back the White House and restore to America what is rightfully ours. A great nation, united, free, and prosperous for our kids and for their kids. Thank you so very much.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reason Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
President Barack Obama named himself one of the country's four best presidents. Better than George Washington, John F. Kennedy, and even Ronald Reagan. But Mr. President was just being modest. He's in fact America's best president at piling on debt. So good that he has managed to pile on nearly as much debt as all the previous presidents combined. All he needed was just 4 years to outspend 220 years of history. We can't afford four more years of America's best president.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right, ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
Reese on the Radio. We're back 33 minutes after the hour right here on blogtalkradio.com, July the 3rd, 2012. I wish that the Real Talk Blanchers were on the show today as opposed to yesterday. And here's why. As you know, we put out a challenge to the folks at Real Talk Blanchers about the re-election of President Barack Obama. And, you know, we are going to go we're going to go dark if Obama wins, and they go dark if Romney wins on November 7th and the rest of November. I wish they would have been, because this audio just came in today, If I'd gotten it a day earlier, I definitely would have played this. Tavis Smiley and Cornel West on their radio show said this about President Barack Obama. Now, these are two huge African-American leaders, journalists, talking about the President of the United States, two black men, revered Negroes. And they said this on their radio show.
Valerie Jarrett, you know, of course, the president's top African-American staffer inside the White House, was one of the keynote speakers at the NABJ convention. This is the annual gathering of the nation's National Association of Black Journalists. All the black journalists who belong to this organization were in New Orleans for their annual convention. This is an election year, and so the president didn't make it, but he sent Valerie Jarrett, and she was there. And she did, in fact, say the room packed full of African-American journalists that the president has genuine love for black people. What's fascinating about that to me, a few things. Number one, that I've never heard the president say that. So to send a surrogate out to tell people that he really loves you is fascinating for me if the president himself doesn't tell you that I love you. You know, that's like me sending you to tell my mama that I love her. Some folk in the audience really wanted to hear her just talk about issues and talk about the campaign and talk about things that really matter. But she got up and just read down this laundry list of accomplishments. And there were folk in the audience who felt like, okay, we got it. But the presentation didn't really work because it was just a resuscitation of talking points as if she felt she needed to convince this audience with these talking points that he really had done something, that she had to convince them. And so here comes the phrase of genuine love. It just struck some in the audience, I'm told, that she was really, really, you know, working hard to try to sell this story to an audience of black journalists. What do you make of that?
No, I think any time you have genuine love, though, brother, usually you don't even have to say it because your record already shows it. I tell my mother I love her, but she already knows it because I'll take a bullet for it. And she knows that. If the bullet's coming, I'm jumping in the way. So the love is the kind of thing that's already manifest so strongly that to even talk about it is just put icing on the cake. And so I think she has to say it because she knows there's deep questions in the minds of so many people, including black people, as to where his commitments really are.
There you have it. That's why I think this would have been perfect for them to hear yesterday. I think they would have probably crapped all over Cornel West and Tavis Smiley for saying that.
Oh, they would have tried to.
But, I mean, look, not a Tavis Smiley fan. Love Cornel West. Don't agree with him politically, but not a Tavis Smiley fan. Legitimacy? Legitimate qualm? I mean...
Of course.
Here it is, you have a president who has made gestures to the gay community, the Latino community, and has not made a grand gesture to the African-American community. I mean, it's not like anybody would view that as being partisan, considering everything else he's done has been partisan.
But he thinks just like other black people think. I don't have to do anything for them. All I got to do is be black, and I'm black. And black people think that he doesn't have to come out and say it. It's a given. Of course he's going to do for you. Why wouldn't he do for you? He's black.
Wow, that was well said. I don't think I could say anything more than that.
Black people are voting for him simply because he's black. Because they think that because he's black, he's got their back.
JC, gotta help you out here. Mary, have a point.
Well, she's dead on with that one. But you know, even today, I mean, they're gonna have that problem with our old Uncle Steve in the morning. They've been at war for a very long time. Harvey, Cornel West, and Tavis Smiley.
Let me tell you, I'm a fan of Steve Harvey. Reese can tell you, it's on my alarm. I wake up to it on my alarm clock. My alarm clock is set to wake me up on the Steve Harvey morning show. I get in my car and go to work. I listen to it. It's funny. But when they start all of that crap about, you better get out there and vote, because you know don't get out there and vote for nobody but Barack Obama. You need to register to vote, blah, 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 blah. All they ever do is, and Barack Obama was on his show. All they do is spew to people get out there and vote, get out there and vote, get out there and vote, because he's black. I mean, they never say any other reason on why. They don't say because he's black, because it's already a given. The people, we already know that, and other black people know that. But they never say, go out there and vote for him because what he has done for not only Americans, but this is what he's done for our people. So, my people, get out there and vote.
They've got nothing to say.
Well, I know that.
Well, JC's talking in particular about the war between Tavis Smiley, Cornel West, against Steve Harvey.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
he's been ripping them a lot. I heard once when he was ripping them, you know, I think you and I talked about the audio, JC, about this whole thing about their poverty bus. And Steve
Ride the poverty bus.
Yeah, he went on this whole tear on Tavis Smiley about the poverty bus and was pretty much just calling them toms for turning their backs on the president or even criticizing him. Which is, I find that baffling. I mean, Steve Harvey, how am I supposed to take you seriously when you're so partisan and you don't talk about the issues of the day? I mean, look, stick to what it is that you know. You know, I mean, pardon the expression, but, you know, you cover nigger nonsense, man. You don't really cover the issue. You know, I mean, that's what your show is about. But I think Mary said it best, that, look, they know what African Americans are going to vote for, why they're going to vote for him, vote for him in general. But I think that Tavis Smiley has a valid point. Shouldn't they be asking, hey, how does the president feel about African American people in this country?
It's obvious.
The only reason why I think it's a legitimate question now, I would have never ever had this question posed at the beginning of his presidency. But I think the question has to be posed now when you come out and say, I support gay marriage and I want to give amnesty to Latinos or immigrants who come here through no fault of their own. That's the only reason why I say, well, look, if you're going to be that partisan, if you're really, really going to go out there and step, you know, you want to put your neck out there on these social issues, then I think African Americans have a legitimate beef to ask, you know, you haven't mentioned us yet. You know,
but did you hear what he did to the Latino?
Oh, that's a great story. Go ahead.
Did you hear what he did?
At the fundraiser?
Yes.
Yes. Go ahead.
Only Latino American citizens with papers and green cards allowed. No illegal immigrants allowed.
Where?
To his fundraising party.
Oh, I didn't know about that one. I thought you were going to talk about the knives and forks being taken away from them at the dinner table.
No. He's having a fundraiser, some Latino fundraiser, but... Oh. He is not inviting any illegal immigrants. You're not allowed to come. You can stay here, and you can give your money to your green card holding friends,
and then
and send them with the money.
Right. Okay.
But you can't come.
Really?
I'll send back a signed picture for you. How about that?
Mike, did you hear about the knife and fork situation with the Latinos?
Oh yeah.
I mean that struck me as kind of screwed up. The not wanting to have illegals at a fundraiser is just because he doesn't want to give Fox News anything to skewer him with, you know, because that would be seen as supporting people breaking the law. But, you know, when you ask...
But he's already supporting people breaking the law by taking an executive order that you call us if you want to, but we ain't helping.
Well, you know, he knows how unpopular it was. That wasn't popular with anybody except a few bedwetting white liberals and Latinos. But you know, if I were black, okay, I would be pissed off at Latinos for trying to leapfrog my position in society. Black people have worked long and hard to get to be number two, and the Latinos are trying to leapfrog number two. And, you know, it's not like Latinos are competing against, I mean, they do compete against blue-collar white people, but Latinos have taken, and I don't mean this to sound politically incorrect, but 50 years ago, maids and housekeepers were who?
50 years ago, maids and housekeepers? Oh, they were black.
Yeah. They were black ladies, right? Who are they now?
They're Latinos.
Thank you. Who used to clean hotel rooms?
They used to be blacks.
And who used to do gardening work and handyman work and all that
stuff?
That's
right.
And who does those jobs now?
And the Latinos have completely cornered the market in the service industry.
And now black people don't have jobs. You know, there's no entry-level jobs for uneducated black people. They got screwed over by the Latinos.
You know, I think that was the thing that made Al Sharpton so angry back in the early 2000s. It wasn't Felipe Calderon. It was the president before him in Mexico, before Felipe Calderon. And I don't know why I'm forgetting his name. But when he made that comment about Latinos or Mexicans come to America to do the jobs that black people won't do.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, and Al Sharpton took personal offense to that.
That was Vincente Fox.
Vincente Fox. That's exactly who it was. Vincente
right, but you know what? He was right about that.
No.
He's right.
No, he's not. He's not right. Here's the reason why. You see, African Americans know one thing. They didn't do. It wasn't about black people wouldn't do the jobs that now Latinos wouldn't do. Is that Latinos undercut them with wages? They took a
And Latinos show up to work on Monday.
Well, this is all
exactly.
They show up.
And they don't get. They don't call in on Friday on payday. After the pay hits the direct deposit at midnight.
Wow.
On Thursday night.
That scenario.
All of a sudden, Friday morning, the damn kids are sick.
Yeah.
No, that scenario would be like at lunchtime. Oh, I got my paycheck, and oh, I had lunch. I gotta go. I think I have food poisoning.
Yes.
That's why when I was managing. Hold on, let me finish this one. I'm like, when I was managing over at the Yellow Cab Company, Hartford, the largest cab company in all of New England, I got to the point where, and I could have gotten in a lot of trouble, could have gotten the company in a lot of trouble, but I wouldn't hire mothers with kids.
Really?
No, I wouldn't, because they were on the process of that welfare to work program.
Right.
They're getting it 21 months. They would get their jobs just to secure so that they don't get kicked off at that 21 month period, at that 21 month point. And every payday and on the 1st and the 16th, the kids are sick. So it got to the point where if you had kids, I wouldn't hire you.
But you don't believe that the Latinos undercut African Americans with pay wages? You don't believe
they're going to cut them, but African Americans don't want the jobs anyway. They feel as though they're beneath them.
Sure. No.
I got a lazy ass nephew right now. I've got a lazy ass nephew right now that my godson. I argue with him on a daily basis. He will not go get a job at McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that because most people don't want entry level positions in the black community. I agree with you there. I mean, I think that's an issue in and of itself. But you know what? Employers, if they know that they can hire an undocumented worker at half the rate that would, you know, that would be minimum wage, they're going to take the undocumented worker.
They were doing it here in the construction industry. When our housing market was booming, all of a sudden they started hiring illegal Mexicans to do drywall and all this kinds of stuff.
Yes,
and that's the job that the bikers used to do, like the actual motorcycle riding bikers.
That's
started
right.
Started getting replaced by illegal Mexicans. So let's just say that influx didn't last very long.
Mm. Hey, Edward, you're on with Reese on the Radio. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, yeah, I got to agree with JC. You know, a lot of these young blacks and, you know, to a certain extent also young whites, they don't want to, you know, take these entry-level hard work, you know, hard positions. I do a lot of work with contractors in Connecticut because I have an apartment building. And talking to these contractors, you know, they'll tell me, you know, they hire these, you know, the Mexican guys and the guys from San Salvador because they come to work every day on time. They take their breaks exactly, you know, 30 minutes and get right back to work. And they can rely on them to be on the job site on time every day. Not because, and they pay them the same amount they would pay an American. But when you hire an American, they show up late. They show up drunk. Some of them get DUIs and they can't get to the job site. They've got some kind of problem.
And not only that, but you get better quality work.
Do you believe it's better quality? Yeah, you probably
I don't know if it's better. I don't know if it's necessarily better quality, but, yeah, I mean, they do work hard.
Do you think
they're sending, money back to their people in Tamaulipas, wherever the hell they're from.
Wait, here's my question. Do you think it's an entitlement mentality with American workers, especially with the young African-American workers, where there's not much of an entitlement sort of behavior with these Latinos, be it a Mexican,
sure, they're all waiting for their 40 acres and a mule.
Yeah, I think they look at it as demeaning. I mean, I flipped burgers when I was in high school. I worked at McDonald's, dude. I wore a paper hat and a blue polyester uniform. They don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah, I don't find any work demeaning. I don't find any work.
I never had to do any of that.
What's that?
I never had to do any of that. I started the cab company as a telephone operator, worked my way up to manager, and I managed it for 12 years. I started working when I was 14, but I was hiring and firing and training people at 17. Still underage, really, to work for the position that I had. But the jobs that you'll find at these young people, especially today's young people, I mean, they're fighting for jobs at Abercrombie, Hollister.
Mm-hmm. And the sad thing is only like 1% of the population is genetically blessed enough to work at Abercrombie or Hollister.
Yeah.
You know, they only hire the most beautiful people they can to work at Abercrombie. You have to look like a model.
That's right. Exactly right. I've never seen anybody horrible looking at an Abercrombie.
Oh, no. You have to be gorgeous. But, you know, you ask, trying to get back to the original point, that black people should say, hey, you know, President Obama, he's done this for the gays and this for the Latinos. What are you going to do for us? But anytime somebody stands up and gives the black community tough love, like, say, Bill Cosby, where he says, you know, pull your pants up and don't name your kid Shaniqua and raise your children, they flip out. So, I mean, that's the only thing he can say is, you know, black America, get your shit together. And if he says that, they're going to flip and call him an Uncle Tom or crazy like they called Bill Cosby.
Yeah, the alternative for this administration is to say nothing. I mean, just like Tavis Smiley says here, that he sends out a surrogate to come out there and says, you know, Barack Obama really loves you. And let's talk about all the things that he's done. And I'm sitting up here going, wait a minute.
Well, what were those things?
It was a list of things talking about health care and the Lilly Ledbetter Act and all this other stuff. I'm sure there was nothing out there that he said that he did specifically for African-American people that he could point out, because that would just be ridiculous. He's not that. I mean, the black community isn't some subtext of the American culture that you can affect in that way. The gay community, they've got an issue to deal with, and that's gay marriage. The Latino community, they've got an issue to deal with, and that's immigration. The black community, that's their issue. And the only issue I can find for them is unemployment. Unless the only issue I can say that would really, really help the African-American community is stop having baby mamas.
Can we
affect that? Because that's a plague in that community. Other than that, the only two other issues you can effectively deal with is drugs and gangs.
And as long as the most predominant culture in that society glamorizes having baby mamas and selling drugs and being in gangs,
exactly.
You're screwed.
Exactly. So you can combat nothing in the black community, because every time you ask the black community what's the black agenda, their argument is the same thing. They just want more from the government.
And the black community is never going to say anything about Latinos being able to stay here, because they want the Mexicans here. Where the hell you think they're getting their drugs from?
Oh, yeah.
They're not getting their drugs.
I get my drugs from a white guy with dreadlocks, so I don't know about this Mexican deal.
No, the big time, and that white guy with the dreads is probably getting his stuff from somebody else.
No, he's growing it.
Okay.
Even entrepreneur.
All right, we'll keep that.
Why you get on radio? And
we'll keep that down.
Okay. All right. 420 forever. The blacks ain't gonna say nothing about the Mexicans or Latinos staying here because they're getting their coke at a better price. They're getting their weed at a better price. They're not going. They don't. They're like, oh yeah, keep them here. They can bring us more drugs.
Yeah, but again, my biggest argument is that the things that are plaguing the black community as far as the black agenda, it's always going to be the same thing over and over again. If you want to combat the issues in black America, you're going to have to deal with things that will eventually, as Mike put it, insult them. It's going to have to be, yes, pull your pants up.
Well, then he could, then Barack Obama could get on and say, hey, I did something for you.
But wait a minute.
I'm letting your Mexican drug cartel stay over here.
Yeah, but look what he did. Look at the response.
Now go re-up.
Perfect example of that is in 2008, during 2008, when he gave that Father's Day speech in June, he was talking about how fathers need to be more responsible and be more involved in their kids' lives. And what did Jesse Jackson do on Fox a couple of days later? He's overheard on the microphone saying Barack Obama talking down to niggas, telling niggas how to live. His words, not mine. Telling niggas how to live.
That's because
I want to cut his nuts off.
Legitimate kid.
Really?
I swear, you've never seen that?
No.
I'm going to play that for you tonight. I'll show you the video. Guys, you remember that, right? Jesse Jackson.
Oh,
yeah.
Talking down to niggas, telling niggas how to live. I want to cut his nuts off because of his Father's Day.
Well, it's because Jesse has an illegitimate kid, man, right?
Yeah, but again, here's a black man, quote-unquote, trying to do something for the black community, and he's undermined by an African-American leader saying he's going to cut his nuts off for telling niggas how to live. Imagine what...
Probably want to say, well, you ain't nothing about being a nigga.
That's why it was so amazing. That's why it was so amazing when we saw Jesse Jackson at that at the stadium when Barack Obama won the election. He was standing there crying. That's why everybody was laughing and was just going, you know, because he was completely missing after it happened. He was missing his son. Pretty much told him, Dad, get the hell off television.
Those were tears of hate.
Yeah, of course there were tears of hate.
Well, Jesse Jackson's entire gimmick is based on taking advantage of stupid people.
Exactly.
Well, but Jesse Jackson, along with most other
race baiters,
Al Sharpton and the rest of them.
Yeah,
those people got their act together, you know, and realize that the crisis in their community is totally self-created, they might turn their backs on jerks like Sharpton and Jackson. But I don't think that they're going to.
Yeah, the truth is that there's no profit in it, though. There's no profit in telling black people to get their act together. You know, it's, you know, the victimization. I mean, we know this. We've talked about this hundreds of times. You know,
they live on that Democrat plantation, and they think the Democrats actually look out for them, but I don't think the Democrats look out for them any more than I think the Republican Party looks out for poor Southern whites that are on their plantation, you know?
So what do you guys got planned for the 4th of July? Mike, what are you doing?
I'm going to go bicycle camping, actually.
You're going bicycle camping?
Yep. Yeah, I'm going to load up my touring bicycle. I'm going to ride 40 miles out to the campground, camp out, and come back on Thursday.
Oh, that sounds cool. And you're just going by yourself?
Yeah, family's out of town, so I'm going to go camping, cook on my little Swedish camp stove, and just live it up.
Wow. What about you, Edward? What do you got planned?
For the weekend, I'm going to head to a friend's barbecue.
Oh, you're doing the same. Yeah, why cook, man? Let somebody else do that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And they're all Latino, so I'm going to ask them to put all the knives and forks away before I get over there.
How about you, JC? JC, what are you doing? I know you're cooking, JC. Come on.
Well, actually, I'm sitting there talking to my brother right now, and I think we're planning something for tomorrow. It's last minute. I thought it was going to be on the weekend. I know I got some stuff to do this weekend, but I think we're going to try to buy us a food stamp card for tomorrow and maybe hit up a barbecue.
You're going to hit a food stamp card? Is that what you just said?
He's going to try to purchase
food. I'm going to buy me a food stamp card.
You know, you were so ghetto. You know, I thought my teachings would have done something for you.
She ain't ghetto. I mean, ghetto, but smart.
No, that's not smart. Do not stop influencing him or encouraging him to do this horrible ghetto behavior. Mary is looking out the window right now because she is worried about the storm.
No, there's no more storms. I don't respect the weather. I'm terrified of storms. I don't like them. I've been in tornadoes. I'm not a fan. I can't handle it. I slip my leg.
Well, I hope everybody's 4th of July is grand and everybody has a great time. Thank you guys, as usual, as always, for calling in. I love it when you guys call in. You're my favorite people in the world. Everybody, please do whatever you can to stay safe. Do not get into trouble. Do not blow off any fireworks in your hands, okay? And try, just for once, especially you haters out there, try once to salute a flag. Be proud to be an American, because at least I know I'm free. Well, you know the whole song. If you don't, you're awful. Oh, and I have to do this. Wait, before I go, hold on. I promised that I would do this. I have to do this before we go. I have to say goodbye to a good friend who we lost today. No, I did. I talked about him before you got here.
Oh.
And we have to at least say goodbye to him. So I want to show my respect because he was a great man in my book, and I loved him, especially as Matlock, because I love courtroom dramas. I love Perry Mason. I love all of those shows. So I want to say goodbye to Matlock, or as many people remember him as Andy Griffith. But I want to say goodbye to Matlock with one of my favorite songs growing up. I used to whistle it all the time. You may have not known there are words to the song, but there are. And I've let the man himself sing those words to you from the Andy Griffith Show. And as soon as my computer decides that it wants to cooperate and play the song, because I'm going to keep talking until it does.
Well, now take down your fishing pole and meet me at the fishing hole. We may not get a bite all day, but don't you rush away. What a great place to rest your bones, and mighty fine for skipping stones. You feel fresh as a lemonade setting in the shade. Weather is hot, whether it's cool, oh, what a spot, ball whistling like a fool. What a fine day to take a stroll and wander by the fishing hole. I can't think of a better way to pass the time of day.
Goodbye, Andy. It's been a pleasure, gentlemen. We'll see you Thursday. It's Reese on the Radio.